This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Daily Digest on the Bigger Picture. I'm Ti Xiaoyik and Shamila Gunnison is in the studio with me. We've got two stories for you today. Amid concerns about a mental health crisis occurring alongside the COVID-19 pandemic, the role of a suicide helpline is more critical than ever. So we'll be speaking to someone from Befrienders KL later on to talk about what it is like to work on a suicide helpline and why they need more volunteers.
And then we're going to take a little trip, to the stateside, because Kamala Harris being elected the first female vice president of the United States has led to another quite notable step forward. Her husband, Doug Emhoff, has announced that he will be leaving his private law practice to focus on his role as the second gentleman. But why is a man leaving his job to support his wife still such a big deal? And what does this say about the way we view gender and the role of the quote-unquote breadwinner? So on that note, we are also asking you on Twitter, what do you think about a man giving up his job to stay at home to support his female partner? The answers are sure, why not, or I don't agree. So you can let us know at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
Yeah, so that'll be in the second half of the hour. But for now, our first story is looking at mental health and the COVID-19 pandemic. Countries all over the world are grappling to contain this pandemic with a strict public health measures that do also have a spillover effect onto the economy and on our social lives. Of course, we are well aware of what these measures are. And at the community and individual level, we are all feeling the effects on our mental well-being, aren't we? Because, you know, the pandemic is number one leading to this sense of increased isolation, for many loneliness and bereavement as well, as we are forced to sort of be apart from many of our loved ones and our acquaintances as well. For some, it may lead to increased use of drugs and alcohol, especially for those facing job losses and other financial stressors. We've also heard about increases in domestic violence during this period, especially, and it's not just in Malaysia, it's globally as well, especially when places go into complete lockdown and families are, in closed quarters and under a lot of stress as well. And of course, underlying all this, for many people who do have serious mental illness, this could either be developing at this point or it could be getting worse. And all of these factors combined could potentially increase suicide risk among our population.
But it is important to know that suicide is not something that is inevitable, even when times get really difficult, right? Suicide risk is considered to be dynamic because there are constantly multiple forces that are at play in each individual and also within each population. So there are actionable steps that policymakers, healthcare leaders and organizational leaders can take to mitigate the risk of suicide. And among others, that includes, for instance, increasing access to mental health care, mitigating financial strain on people, and investing resources into crisis hotlines.
So this is a good point about the crisis hotlines, because we've heard time and again about how loneliness and social isolation are actually just as dangerous as other physical health-related risk factors like smoking and obesity when it comes to leading to premature death. So I want to quote Dr. Christine Moutier here. She's the Chief Medical Officer of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And she said, lives can be saved simply by making people feel more connected to each other, that they are part of a larger community. And so this kind of connection can come from crisis hotlines, because in times when people feel like they don't have someone to talk to, or perhaps they feel like they can't talk about certain problems to even people around them, the anonymous kinds of helplines play a role there. And just to point to how people have been using these kinds of hotlines, Minister of Health Dr. Adam Baba in September said that three government psychosocial hotlines received more than 11,000 calls for assistance from the period of March to August alone. And I'm just wondering whether this may see an increase right now during this third wave.
And we are hearing, many healthcare practitioners talking about how that mental health crisis is the so-called silent pandemic,
it is,
right?
Yeah.
So on that note, if you haven't heard of Befrienders KL, they are a 24-hour non-profit organization that provides free emotional support to people who are lonely, in distress, in despair, or are having suicidal thoughts. And Befrienders has reported a 10% increase in calls from January to July this year compared to the same period of time last year. And the percentage of calls that indicated suicidal thoughts and attempts had also increased in the same six-month period to 40%. Mm. And their lines are operated by trained volunteers around the clock, and they listen to you, you know, they get you to share your problems. And they also provide support if you feel lost about how to cope with whatever you're going through.
Mm. So it's interesting, isn't it? I think perhaps we don't really think about the so-called voices
on the other end,
on the other end of the line, but they're providing such an important service, and what must be really challenging as well. So there's an article in Psych that I read, written by Natalia Dashan, who studied psychology in Yale University, and she wrote about how working on a suicide helpline changed how she talks to everyone in her life. So she says that each conversation is entirely different because each person is entirely different, you know, and it depends on the type of call that she's dealing with. Sometimes it could just be an informal chat, something like speaking to a friend. Or sometimes she has to act almost like a dispatch officer to refer the caller to a particular emergency service if there's a crisis that the person is going through. And she says all of these experiences have had a profoundly powerful effect on the way she handles almost all conversations in other aspects of her life as well. And it's changed her relationships to a radical extent. So some key things that she says she's learned is not to assume answers to questions, but rather to ask questions and listen openly. Other invaluable skills that she's picked up is to practice active listening, and to focus on the moment as it is unfolding, to create something brand new. And I thought these kinds of insights are pretty amazing because it's not often that you would reflect on how you listen and connect with other people.
Yes, and like you said, Shawik, we don't often think about there's such a varied skill set that these people need to be able to employ depending on each situation.
That's right.
So to get more insight into the work that these helpline volunteers do, we have on the line Victor Tan, who is the deputy chairman of Befrienders KL. Hi, Victor. Thanks for speaking to us today. Can you share with us how you came to be with Befrienders KL and why you chose to work with the helpline?
So my work with Befrienders KL was just a natural transition from my previous volunteering activity in the UK. So I was working in the UK for some time, and while I was there, I volunteered with the Samaritans UK. And so just for your information, the Befrienders actually kind of, you know, sprang out from the Samaritans and was also kind of going along the same line of work, which is suicide prevention. So how I got involved with the Samaritans was, it's kind of sounds a bit of something you might hear from a storybook or something like that, but for me, it was just, I had a friend of mine, a close friend of mine who, you know, who was very important to me, helped me a lot. But he was, at one point, he was going through a very, very low period in his life. He was feeling really down. And he actually had suicidal thoughts, but he didn't divulge that to me for a variety of reasons. And so he was like just setting off somewhere to actually, you know, attempt suicide. And some like total stranger figured out, I don't know how he managed to do that, but he kind of figured out that my friend was actually going to some place he was going to attempt suicide, and then he, you know, kind of intercepted him and talked to him, and as a result of that, my friend was persuaded not to go ahead with the suicide attempt. So I think that was very, I only found out about that much, much later, but, you know, that was, I guess, the genesis of how I got involved in the helpline in the first place, because it was very, very inspiring for me that someone else had helped this person, this very close friend of mine, who I had no idea was feeling suicidal. You know? And so that's essentially what the Samaritans does. You know, it offers an anonymous helpline to people who are feeling really down, especially those who are feeling suicidal.
Victor, we'd like to try and understand what actually happens on a call. How do you manage the conversation?
So our focus is on something called empathetic listening, where we try to get the caller to express his or her feelings with the intention that when there is, when there's free and open expression of feelings in an open, non-judgmental space, the caller will usually feel some form of emotional relief. And so that's what we do. We also validate difficult feelings that the caller might be having. So we like kind of let them know it's fine to feel difficult, you know, to have, you know, painful feelings is perfectly fine. We don't push our beliefs onto the caller, especially our religious beliefs. We don't give unsolicited advice to the caller on solving his or her problems. Okay. So that's the primary, focus or the primary slant in how we handle the conversation. Okay, it's very much a feeling-focused or emotion-focused approach. Okay, we also check for suicidal feelings and suicidal thoughts. So we are taught to ask the suicide question. We are taught to follow through with checking on suicidal intentions, as in like whether they have a plan, when they're going to do it, whether they have means to suicide, and so on. So let's assess the severity of suicide risk. And then we, you know, follow on through that. So if the caller is highly suicidal, then we will kind of really, you know, focus in on to the specific feelings, the specific painful emotions that are pushing them to the brink of suicide. And we talk about things that have helped them in the past and, you know, offer them hope in terms of moving forward and so on. So that's a whole line of befriending that we can talk about in detail. But roughly, that's kind of generally what we do. So there's the empathetic listening part, which is like the main guideline or the main anchor for the entire conversation. And then there's also the part where we explore suicide.
So what kind of training do volunteers go through?
So all volunteers have to go through a training period of about 9 sessions. At the moment, it's 9 sessions. So during this training period, we're taught on how to do empathetic listening properly, how to ask a suicide question, and so on. So the technical aspects of actually, you know, supporting a caller throughout the duration of a phone conversation is actually imparted during that training. But that's just the technical aspects, right? The actual practical aspects of how to deal with your feelings that you might have when you are talking to someone who's highly suicidal. So that one comes with practice. So as you take calls and as you get more experience in taking calls, you kind of learn how to cope with, you know, the difficult feelings that might come up.
And what kind of difficult feelings are these? How did you overcome these challenges?
Right. So first thing is we all take turns to go on duty to man the helpline. So it's not like we are on every day. So each volunteer takes a turn in terms of manning a what we call a duty slot. And so there is a requirement that everybody mans a duty slot for 3 hours every week. Okay. And then in addition to that, in terms of how to handle difficult calls, right? So there are some difficult calls where suicidal callers, they might indicate that they're feeling suicidal. And then, of course, you try your best to support them. And they might hang up and say, you know what, thanks a lot for, you know, trying to help out. I'm still going to go ahead and kill myself. So calls that can be really, really difficult. Other kinds of difficult calls you might have or that I had in the past is callers who are constantly challenging you. So they might say like, you know, you're not really supporting me or, you know, you should say this or I want your opinion on this. Why aren't you giving me your opinion on this? And so they will find, you know, they pretty much find fault with literally everything you say. They challenge you throughout the whole phone conversation. So it's very difficult to be, you know, be emotionally supportive of them. Female callers sometimes they might get sexually demanding callers, that callers that, you know, instead of talking about their emotional issues, they go into very sexually explicit conversations for a variety of reasons. So that can be also very daunting for female volunteers. How I handle that is really just trying to understand that we don't take any responsibility for the actions of the callers. In other words, I accept the fact that I'm human. I accept the fact and I also give full credit to myself because I am there for this suicidal caller. So I am doing my best, just like a doctor does his best, like a surgeon. Say a surgeon is working on a patient, he does his or her best to, you know, get the patient through the surgery. But at the end of the day, after doing the best you can, you also have to accept the fact that sometimes not all surgeries will be successful. So same thing, I've already accepted the fact that I'm really trying my best. So at the end of the day, if the person hangs up and say he or she decides to actually follow up with, you know, the suicidal thoughts, then I accept that that's his or her decision and I can't take responsibility for that. So that's really important. But of course, you know, that's the theory of it. To actually actualize it, to be able to practically implement it in real life, it takes time. So initially, it's going to be really difficult, you know, when someone hangs up on you and says they're going to kill themselves. Thankfully, that doesn't happen that often. But when it does happen, or when you're not sure that the person feels better after the conversation, you are going to end up blaming yourself. That's, you know, that's just natural. And after time, you kind of learn to let go and realize that, you know, you've already done the best you can, you know, and you give yourself credit for that. Hey, I've done something that a lot of people wouldn't have done in the first place.
It sounds like a really tough vocation, but, you know, I'm sure there's something that volunteers get out of this work, some benefits.
Well, for one thing, there's a research on mental health that shows that getting involved in voluntary activity, and it doesn't mean just listening to a helpline, but just any kind of voluntary activity where you're contributing to the general welfare of humanity is very useful. It's very beneficial for our mental health. So that's, I guess, the number one thing, I guess, for most people, you know, that they get from all of this. It's just that feeling of having made a positive contribution. So just now I talked about, you know, the really difficult cases, but actually the vast majority of calls that we get, not just me, but all the other volunteers, the vast majority of calls we get, the callers will actually feel better after the call, and they will actually thank you. They'll express their gratitude to you. They'll say like, hey, thanks so much. You know, you made so much of a difference in my life by just listening to me. Mm-hmm. And it really helps you. I mean, it really makes you feel good about yourself. I don't want to make this sound like an ego trip. It's a sense of feeling that, hey, I've contributed to making the world a better place today. So that's a really incredible sense of, you know, well-being that you get from it, you know. So that's what I'm talking about for your mental health and well-being. That's the first aspect. The second aspect is a lot of volunteers who get involved in this work, they get involved in it because of their personal struggles and issues in the past. So, like, for example, for me, I was motivated by, you know, I shared about my story about my friend. We have a lot of volunteers who have had struggles with suicidal thoughts in their past. And so for them, it's a way of contributing back to society, of like helping others who had gone through, who are going through the same, you know, difficulties that they had gone through in the past and they had managed to surpass as well. So, yeah. And that again, is also very rewarding as well. So, yes. Mm. So it's a very emotionally rewarding job if you can get past the difficulties that we talked about just now.
So earlier we mentioned the article in Psych about how volunteering with a helpline changed the way the writer communicates in her own personal relationships. How would you say that working on the helpline has changed you?
Okay, well, I think the main takeaway from this is we learn to listen more instead of trying to just interject and push our opinions across in conversations. Mm-hmm. And we try to figure out what feelings a person might be having. So it could be a romantic relationship or even a social relationship. But this work kind of trains you to figure out what that person might be feeling, what the person is going through before he or she shares a specific talks or says something. We try and get a feel where they're coming from, and we try and, you know, reflect those feelings back to the person. So in that way, I guess it's helped to change our relationships or helped to change the way I relate to others. Although I would say personally for myself, what the helpline has actually impacted me the most is actually taught me that we are very unique in many ways, but we are also very same in many ways. So, and I find that, like, you know, it's kind of a eye-opening thing to me in a very down-to-earth, very real, practical way. So let me give you an example of what I mean. It's like, you know, I've listened to many people who have gone through relationship problems. And, you know, on the surface, it might sound like, you know, relationship problems, they're all the standard thing, right? But actually, every single person I've talked to, their relationship issue is very unique to each and every one of them, right? But at the same time, the feelings that they go through, right, the kind of painful feelings they suffer, like, you know, heartbreak, betrayal, sadness, disappointment. It is so same across the spectrum. So it doesn't matter what your religious belief is. It doesn't matter what your ethnicity is. You know, you suffer in the same way. So, you know, we talk about, you know, unity in diversity, right? So that's like a tagline that you see a lot of. Mm-hmm. Even our country has that. But when you are on this helpline, you actually see that we are so common in many ways. We suffer in exactly the same way. We're so identical in so many ways. Mm. But yet, we are also very unique in so many ways, you know, and so that's just so, I don't know, it's a very unique insight into humanity that you would not get if you were not, you were not interacting with all these different people who were sharing with you their deeper most secrets and thoughts and feelings. I think that has been the most impactful part of working on a helpline.
And finally, Victor, is Befrienders KL in need of volunteers, and how can people find out more?
Always in need of more volunteers. We never have enough volunteers. And that's one of the major complaints you'll get about us, is that people will call through and they can't get us. And again, during this MCO period, we have been very busy. People have tried to call us and, you know, we don't have enough volunteers, so they are not able to get through. They feel very angry or disappointed. So yes, we definitely need more volunteers. Now, we typically run 2 training sessions a year, or at least we used to before this pandemic started, before the entire lockdown. So right now, we are not sure about our plans for the future. It's all kind of very uncertain, it's up in the air at the moment. It really depends on, you know, the lockdown situation and so on. Mm-hmm. But the way we advertise our training sessions is we do that through our social media outlets. So we have a Twitter account, and we also have a Facebook account. Just check on that periodically. We will advertise about a month in advance whenever we are having our training.
Thank you so much, Victor. That was Victor Tan, Deputy Chairman of Befrienders KL, who has been manning the helplines here in Malaysia for the past 11 years. And I think some really valuable insight into the very important work that they do.
And, you know, apart from volunteering, as you just said, Xiaowei, they do very important work and they are always in need of donations as well. Mm. So if you'd like to donate to keep Befrienders KL going, you can visit befrienders.org.my and click on the donate link. And you can request for tax exemption receipts for your donations as well.
Yeah, and you know, these are basically difficult times for everyone. Mm. And as we've heard many times as well, it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to reach out for help. So if you're in need of emotional support, you can call the Befrienders KL at 03-7627-2929. They impose no telco charges and they are 24/7. There's also Mercy Malaysia's psychosocial hotline, 03-2935-9935. That one is reachable only during office hours and telco charges do apply. We'll take a quick break now. And when we come back, we will discuss our second story for the Daily Digest. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.